This is the Freedom Fiends, triggering you with the most delicious diet of worms the central scrutinizers will allow. We tip every sacred cow and kill every Buddha on the road to rattle the infantilized masses into existential crisis. Yeah.
Freedom Fiends is covered BIPCOT, no government license, blurting through your brain. Freedom Fiends, BIPCOT license from BIPCOT.org says it. Used and reused by anyone except governments or agents is okay. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. I'm Michael W. Dean. That was Nima Vidati. Let's hear from James Babb. You there, James Babb? Hello? Yeah, he's out smoking crack, I think.
He's out smoking crack.
And,
at the big gay crack party.
Yeah, and Ben. Ben Stone, the bad Quaker.
I'm
bad
here.
Cracker. Quacker. You there?
All right. Yeah.
What happened to James?
We dropped James for a moment. He must have been...
He's still there. I could probably tell him what to do, but he yells at me when I tell him how to use the software I developed, so I'm not going to... He made me feel bad last night. All right, so...
Aww.
So I want to talk about...
It's one thing you have to keep in mind when you know Michael, is he's going to tell you how to do your audio, and you have to let it roll. You have to judo the Michael audio advice.
Well, especially with, like, Fiendphone, which has a lot of intricacies which don't exist in other software.
I had an audio question about Fiendphone.
You said, you just made fun of me. I'm not going to answer it. What is
it? No. You said that when you don't have a mixer, keep your mic up as loud as possible when using Fiendphone. Does Fiendphone have some kind of internal limiter on the channel?
No, but the mics that we're all using, these Audio Technicas, sound good when they're full bore, basically.
Ah, got it. They don't crack and distort.
No,
like some
not with the USB in. No.
Right.
Hey, James, okay. If you can hear us, type to us. All right. So I want to talk, since it is Fiendependence Day, July 4th, Independence from Dependence Day. I heard there was a weird call on Free Talk Live the other day. Someone called in and was talking about the Peacekeeper app. You know what this is? You guys heard this?
Yeah.
Yeah. We talked about it on The Fiends back when it was just me and you, Michael.
Yeah. But suddenly, like... they're doing a second round of funding and everyone's talking about it. So they're doing a Kickstarter to like be able to have this thing where you have on your phone where you like preset the 6 or 8 people you wanted to call or however many people you want to call, people you know for different things. Like, you know, if your house is being broken into, you probably want to call your neighbor across the street with a gun and a camera. You know, if it's a fire, you probably want to call the people up the street that have their own private fire truck, whatever. So if you have medical emergency, you probably want to call the nurse that lives across the street.
Is it limited to people you know? Like, I have to be friends with them or I have to have met them at the PTA meeting?
I don't know. I would imagine you'd only want to put people that you know in it. Because otherwise, I mean, what would you do if you got a random text from somebody you didn't know that said, someone's breaking into my house. I'm on my way to your house. Come to my house and bring a gun. I don't think I'd reply to that.
See, the way I had thought or envisioned it is it'd be like a rating-based system. So it'd be kind of like those freelance-type websites where there's people that are like fire-type people and police-type people. And they have ratings, and you can like tap on them.
Maybe for private organizations, but also, you know, for people you know. That's what I've seen. Yeah, I guess in heading towards a LibPair, you know, you'd have the people you subscribe to for your local, enforcement of protection or whatever. So, but this guy called into Free Talk Live the other day and sounded kind of like nutty, really full, true on liberty guy, but kind of, you know, constitutionalist or something, you know, not really all the way there. But he was like, he was misunderstanding that app and he thought it was for vigilanteism, like, you know, to come like kill the police that are breaking into your house with a warrant or something. And I was thinking, like, I mean, I don't want to get them or us in trouble, but I'm like, why couldn't that app be adapted for on-the-spot Nuremberg trials for drug warriors?
Right, because who do you call when the SWAT team's kicking in your door?
I know.
Isn't that there's that audio, that really haunting audio from Waco, where like one of the guys in the compound is calling his local sheriff, and like he's on a first name basis.
He knows
it's a small town area. Yeah, and he's like they're shooting women and children with automatic rifles. What do? I call my local sheriff. But what's he gonna do? He's got the FBI there.
What did the sheriff say to him?
I'd have to go back and play it. I got it. That's a good question. Somebody should find that audio.
Yep.
Well, I'm not going to do it.
I'm not going to do it.
Ben? Yep. Not it. 1, 2, 3. Not it.
I'm very careful about my Google searches nowadays.
Ah. Well, you're still using Google, though.
You know, I use, what is that? Some people go with DuckDuckGo.
Start page.
Yeah. I go with start page. I like start page.
Everyone said, yeah, Bill B always recommends start page. See, the thing is, I don't have any proof that start page and DuckDuckGo aren't just like NSA fronts to Google.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
That's my problem too. Unless somebody at Anonymous comes out and says, but then how do you know it's really somebody from Anonymous? How do you know it's not somebody at the NSA?
And even if it was vetted today, how do you know next week it's not going to be compromised?
Right.
Right. Right. I think it's always just safe to assume that a cop is always on the other end of any communication.
They used to have these stickers probably in the 70s, but I know I had them in the 90s. On my phone, on my physical phone in my house, there was a sticker someone gave me, and I think I got it at some, like, it was probably some hippie event in Golden Gate Park where they had, like, you know, the one guy who understood computers and security handing something out, you know, back then. And it was a sticker that I had on my phone that said, assume this phone is being tapped.
Yeah. Right, right. Yeah. That's great advice. Yeah, great advice.
And Abby Hoffman said in 1970-something, early 70s, in Steal This Book, he said, never say anything over a phone you wouldn't say to a cop. And this is like, I heard this when I was 12, before I ever touched a computer, you know, when computers were like, took up whole floors of buildings and I had no chance of like using one. So yeah, I've always kind of assumed that stuff.
It's good that you had a head start on most of these people.
I will say I really do not want to have someone come over to my house and shoot the SWAT team. I want to voluntarily surrender to the SWAT team like a good citizen with my hands up and my middle finger out and then hope that the due process of law will protect me after that.
Hope the judge is fair, defender is competent, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I noticed when I was in Acapulco, I was using Facebook has like a calling method now, right? So you can actually make calls through Facebook like it were Skype or something over Wi-Fi.
Ugh.
And I didn't want to pay. It was like $5 per minute if I was going to use Sprint to call. And it was like $3 per MB of data. So it's going to be like 10 bucks for an email or something. And so I was just using the Facebook to call. And stuff I talked about on it would then show up in my Facebook feed as promoted ads.
Wow.
Like it was searching my audio.
Whoa.
For stuff. Like I talked about how I love the Mexican Coke and it was so delicious and I wish I could buy it all the time. And then after the call, I saw ads for Mexican Coke in my
Facebook feed. Are you sure you didn't mention it anywhere else, like in text?
Pretty sure. Yeah. I mean, I could go back and look at my Facebook page, but it was like right after I said it via audio. And me and my mom were talking on, this wasn't even Facebook phone. This was just Verizon. We were talking on just my cell phone. Maybe it's Sprint. It was one of the companies. I guess we shouldn't be too specific. It's one of the major telecom companies. And we were talking about fences. So she needed a new fence. Like, I've never searched for a fence. I don't own my home. You know, I rent, so I don't worry about
stuff
like buying
fences. You don't
own your fence.
Yeah.
I don't own my fence.
I own my fence.
Yeah, I own me, but not my fence. But my mom needs a new fence. So I was talking to her about it for a good 15 minutes. And then the next day, I get stuff showing up on my Facebook feed trying to pitch me fence bids. You know, have a contractor come and quote you what you need for your fence. I'm like, nah, that's a little too close to home, man.
Wow. So it's like Minority Report where they're reading your face as you're walking through the mall and adjusting the sales ads to you. Hey, Nima, you need that new fence.
Right.
Step on over here.
Or like in Futurama where the ads are during your dreams, so you wake up wanted with the rocket ships on it.
On the iPhone. It goes in your eye.
Right.
You know, this kind of goes along with a thing. I emailed you guys about an article at Gizmondo like a couple months ago that was a rehash of a 1971 story where a group of academics was given, in Georgetown at the university, they were given the task of devising the most comprehensive invisible surveillance system that they could come up with. And the answer was that they came up with bank debit cards. And at the time, 1971, there were no bank debit cards. There were no ATMs. There were no debit cards. You had like you had like maybe four companies that offered credit cards. You had the Diners Club, American Express, MasterCard, and Visa, and that was it. That was all there was with credit cards, and those didn't have anything to do with your bank. And so in 1971, this sort of think tank got together, and there was also some input from the RAND Corporation. And they actually came up with the best type of surveillance that they could imagine, and it would be bank debit cards that didn't exist yet. And they surmised that would be the way to watch people, know everything that they purchased, know everywhere they went, you know, how much gas are they using, how much are they driving, everything.
Do you remember a...
So they're like the state is Satoshi, their white paper led to debit cards.
Yeah.
Do you remember a 1967 sci-fi comedy called The President's Analyst? It's a James Coburn film.
Where
the phone company is the enemy. And it was like, in 1967, like, the phone company was like nothing to most people, you know? Like, people weren't even, you know, I don't think even like hackers were doing much to the phone company yet. You know, it was just this thing. It was very prescient, though.
Wow. I hadn't thought about that in years.
I'm going to have to go see that again.
You guys are old.
Old. Well, you know, Nima, it is possible for younger people to watch old movies.
That's true, but I'd have to first watch movies in order to watch old movies.
Oh, man.
I can't remember the last movie I watched. I do watch Mad Men, though. I watch Mad Men. That's the show I'm watching now.
I watched all of it, it broke mid-season. Usually when shows break mid-season, now I get really excited for it to come back. And when it came back, I watched like one, and I haven't even watched the rest of them. I'm kind of like, yeah, whatever.
Of the most current season?
Yeah.
Is it like seven or six? Something like that?
Yeah.
I just started watching from the beginning on Netflix.
It's actually, I should like it too, because it's like actually into my life at this point, you know? It's into the early 70s.
Ah, okay. Oh, is it really? Already?
Yeah, to where... Well, there was one that was the moon landing, and I was 5 when that happened. I was 69.
Oh, wow. Wow. Okay.
All right.
Fair enough. Well, we'll take a quick trip to the market and continue with more.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty Projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many Liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
Hey, this is some Squisscar Squig Elves from Death Clocks, and you are listening to the Freedoms Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
Tired of those old Freedom Fiends buttons? Well, the Freedom Fiends have new button designs.
As always, it's only $10 for 10 buttons, and you'll get these nifty designs. Buy sheep, for sheep, on sheep.
State speech is hate speech.
Two designs for Guns and Weed, the Road to Freedom.
Three designs for Fiend Phone.
Pipcot No Gov.
A Freedom Fiends worms button.
And ask me about my worms.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
We'll be right back.
And happy Fiend Dependence Day to you all. This is Nima Vidati.
Worms.
Used to be one half of the Freedom Fiends. Now I'm like 1/16th of the Freedom Fiends, I think.
You're 1/22nd. I think it's 21 and 22. Yeah. Yeah, you've been you've been diluted to the point that you're like homeopathic now.
Right, right. We talk about NEMA and parts per million. Parts per fiend, PPF.
Only virtual NEMA is here.
It's good times.
Remaining.
Yeah.
It's the opposite of NEMA. Yeah. NEMA's been diluted to the point of where it's the opposite of NEMA. He's running for state representative.
He's in all the other fiends. No, he's okay, in there you go. He's in all the other fiends.
I'm Jeff Berwicking it up.
All the other fiends have 1/20th of a NEMA. Oh.
That was a sting. What I miss?
Well, is he still running for president of Anarchy of Canada?
He is, yeah, yeah. Well, there's only one road in Canada, and it all leads to the government, I guess.
There's only one rodent, and Jeff Berwick wants the job?
No, I think it's great. No, I think he's trolling them to death. I think he's fun with it. Why not?
James likes everybody. Jim likes everybody.
Well, everybody we've talked to, like Ethan, who's the only person I know in Canada, said that, yeah, the Canadian Libertarian Party literally just is a bunch of anarchists that like to troll the government in their races, right?
What else is there for the Libertarian Party to do anywhere? I mean,
exactly. Well, the ones here actually pretend like they want to be part of the government.
I don't know any of those people. I know a lot of Libertarian Party people, and nobody, I don't know, you know.
Well, what do they do?
I think those people are long gone. I don't know. Are they? I think they gave up, and now they're on the Rand Paul campaign.
Yeah. Well, that's even worse, isn't it? That's way worse.
Yeah, but it's worse for them, but it's left behind just, you know, anarchist people that want to troll and make fun of the government and you know, just use it for the comedy value, which is what it's for, really.
Yeah. Hey, James. James, yes. do you have a good phone for filming police?
Yeah, reasonably well. I mean, I use my iPhone, but I also have video in my in my DSLR for filming.
Because I have I'm looking to give to a fiend a Samsung track phone. I'm not using
track phone.
Yeah, it's a little, you know.
What's a track phone?
Well, it's a Samsung.
Is that like what you give to your girls?
No,
track when they hit the track.
No, it's actually the ones that you can add minutes, you know. Prepaid minutes too, but it is a Samsung phone, MP3 player, video camera.
Okay,
you know all that stuff.
Okay.
I know.
You don't have any police in Wyoming, right? There's no police in Wyoming to film.
No.
Oh, there's plenty of police in Wyoming. The sheriff told me I wasn't allowed to open carry when I was in Wyoming.
That guy's gone. Wow.
Is he good? Yeah. I hope so.
So you guys got topics for Fiend Independence Day?
Yeah. Oh, it is Fiend Independence Day, isn't it? Yeah, hey, I got a topic. Pretty soon I'm going to be headed out to see Ben.
You're headed out person. To sea with Ben?
To see Ben. And at the sea.
Maybe,
yeah. My wife wants to go to Alabama, so.
Yeah, we're looking
forward
to that.
Some vacation time, yeah, on this coming Monday and Tuesday. I'll be headed, I'll be in Alabama, hopefully.
Very cool.
That's the plan.
Very cool.
Cool.
Nice.
I was actually, I guess we can do this on the air since, you know what? I've got a, let me change the topics totally before we lose Michael.
Is that rattlesnake thing? Like, iron lung and iron. And
Michael has developed
a
rattle.
It's a thing I blow into. No, it's a thing that I blow into to help my lung health, and it really works and it clears phlegm, but it does sound like a rattlesnake.
Before we lose Michael off the show, I wanted to bring this up. I learned something about audio today as I was setting up my studio and everything. I have a really long microphone cord, a microphone cable, and it was in a loop, you know, wrapped up in a loop with a tie around it to control it so it don't trip over it or whatever. And I had just set it down over a metal coffee can just to kind of take up less space on the desk. And I, when I was setting everything up for the show today, I had this weird hum and sort of an echo. I was picking up sounds from inside the RV here.
Your
that
brain.
I'm in. And I'm unplugging things, moving stuff around, trying to figure out where this hum is coming from. It's driving me crazy. I'm chasing it all over the place. I'm thinking, oh, no, you know, we're getting ready to start a show, and I got a hum. Michael's going to kill me. And I found it with It was.
I will kill you.
It was from having the mic cable in a loop around a metal coffee can. As soon as I moved the metal coffee can away,
turned it into an antenna. Man,
it did. It made a receiver. Yeah. It literally made a microphone.
Interesting.
Now, okay. Well, I have a question about that when we get back from this trip to the market. But I am also intrigued. Stay with us, fiends.
Real cliffhanger there. What will happen next?
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Freedom Fiends. Hey, Michael.
Was Nima scratching and rapping?
I heard some scratching. I thought that was you, Michael.
Nope. Was it Jim?
It was me.
MC Hamster Wheel over there?
What were you doing? You were playing washboard, weren't you?
Yeah.
That was a washboard break.
So, you know, yeah, Ben was playing his washboard abs. So the only reason Jim got to be on the Fiends, and I'm really glad he did because he's good, last Pork Fest, not this one that just finished, but a year ago and a week ago when I was there, Jim drove up to me in a car going like 3 miles an hour with, I don't know, it was like the Beverly Hillbillies. There's like his 27 members of his family were in the back of the car. And it was broad day. I think one of his wives was teaching a homeschooling math class in the back, and the other one was cooking. And he drove up to me and he goes, "Hey, Michael, you should come over and have a beer at the Bab campground." And I'm like, "Where's that?" And you pointed, and then you drove. Like, I didn't know who you were, but you knew who I was, so I figured you were a good guy, and that's why I asked you to be on the Fiends.
Oh, well, okay.
Yeah. Oh, did you go to his campground? And what happened there?
I went there like later at night, but it was still light out, but he wasn't there. I guess he was still around inviting people.
And when James has a campground,
for more wives to add to the clan.
I should point this out too.
That wasn't the Bab campground; it's the Bab compound.
That is it. It's the compound.
Yeah. It's like that scene in Lawrence of Arabia where they go to the Bedouin camp, and there's the Bedouin chieftain is there, and he's got like 20 tents that are all around, and there's people all around on the outside, and every time he stands up, everybody on the outside stands up to see what he has to say. That's kind of how that's kind of the Bab. And James says, "I am a river, and what wealth comes to me flows out to my people." It's a great scene that I am butchering horribly.
Hey Jim, have you ever seen a book called Possum Living?
No, I haven't.
You should check it out. It's a book from it's a off the grid living book written in the 70s, written by a teenage girl who was I went to boarding school near where you live in Paley, Pennsylvania, with her brother, and she, because her brother went to this school, the school invited her to come speak. She was older. She wrote the book when she was like 16 or 17, and she was like probably 23 or 24 when she came and spoke at the school. And everybody at the school was really grossed out by what she was saying. Like, yeah, and we just pick stuff through dumpsters, and we don't have electric bills. And I was like, that sounds amazing. And everybody else in my school was really grossed out by it. But it's a really old school, off the grid prepper, not even prepper. Like, I don't think she really had any agenda. I don't think there's anything in it about like society's melting down. It was more like, why have a job? It was pretty cool. And she is homeschooled. Okay. One day her dad just, she her parents got divorced. She chose to go live with her dad. Her dad didn't like school, and he was really smart. And he said, you don't have to go to school if you don't want. So they just went to her school one day, told everyone they were moving to California. She hugged everyone goodbye. He took her out of the school, and then they just stayed in the same town in Pennsylvania and never went.
I've got that book right here in my hand, Michael. Yeah. Yeah. I've never read the whole thing, but I have it. It's on my bookshelf.
I think we did. Yeah, you did. We did an episode on it 4 years ago. But I think
my wife had read it. My wife brought it because this is the kind of stuff we like to do.
It takes place like two towns over from where James lives, I think, and it's homeschooling and just the girl. Okay, this is funny too. This girl with no high school diploma actually went and worked as a rocket scientist at NASA. So when they say, you know, well, as long as it's not rocket science, you can be homeschooled. No, she was a homeschooled rocket scientist, man.
Awesome.
Well, and it sounds more like she was unschooled than homeschooled, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like the Ron Paul curriculum or something and having Tom Woods give her lessons.
No, she was out shooting.
She was just like living
life. She was
life.
Out shooting turtles with her dad and then going to the library. There's actually video of her and her dad shooting some turtles. If you search Possum Living, but she was like it was a big thing for a minute. Like this book was on a major publisher. She was like on the Mike Douglas show. She was on What's My Line, you know, check it out. Wow. James, I think you'll dig
it. Yeah, I will. Well, you know, it's not far from my fallback plan.
Who's Mike Douglas?
I don't know what that is.
These children these days.
I could learn something.
Talk show host from the 70s.
Is he the guy that smoked cigarettes on stage and yelled at Ron Paul? Who was that guy?
No, that was Robert Downey Jr. No.
Morton Downey.
Morton Downey Jr.
It wasn't Iron Man.
It was not Robert Downey Jr.
Iron Lung Man.
But, you know, I'm going to read that book because I need a fallback plan because right now we do private school, but it's kind of expensive. And currently my fallback plan, if I can't afford private schools anymore, is to just let the kids loose at the mall.
Yeah.
and where there's an Apple store and a food court. And I figured, you know, it's all right. You know, it's probably still better than a government school. So, but, you know, maybe just like let them loose with some possums or shooting turtles. That's not bad.
Doesn't seem very sporting to shoot
It's
turtles.
Really not, and they don't die. They basically, like, just suffer for 25 minutes.
You just plink off of their shell. Just dents them.
Well, Dorothy did some shooting with Randy England this week, which was pretty awesome.
Nice.
So, yeah. There's a shooting event. It was a fantastic event. It was like a newbie shoot, they called it. The range was sponsored, was donated. All the ammunition was donated. All these instructors came out, donated their time, just made this really comfortable environment for anybody that wanted to come up and try out all kinds of neat firearms. So
cool.
Anyway.
How old is your daughter, James?
13. She's 13.
13. When did you start getting her acquainted with shooting and guns and such?
This weekend with Randy.
No, this was, I guess, maybe 2 years ago might have been the first time she went shooting when she was like 11.
Okay.
So,
okay.
Me ever since, too. She's like, come on.
Yeah.
I like the idea of having daughters that are, you know, have lethal skills. I think that's
a great idea. Yeah, me and my wife were just talking earlier, and she said, you know, I hope you know that I don't want you polishing your shotgun in front of your daughter's boyfriends when she gets of age, because that shows that you don't trust her as a good judge of character. And I said, no, I don't think I'll need to, because she'll take her prospective mates out to the range and see who can shoot more clays.
You know, I was on that same topic. I was actually sharpening a machete one time when my daughter brought home her new boyfriend to
on purpose, just because that's what you happen to be doing.
Yeah,
guys, I'm going to take off. Have a good Independence Day.
Hey, Michael.
Thank you for your service.
Be safe.
Worms.
Peace, Michael.
Bye.
Thank you for your service.
Thank you, Nima, for starting the Fiends and then coming back to the Fiends. I like
it. Yeah. Michael Jordan.
Yep.
Right, peace.
I'll pretend I get that. All right.
Okay. So, yeah, I was sharpening my machete because I had used it and it was dull, so I was sharpening it. And and they come walking up the driveway. I'm sharpening a machete. Hey, how's it going? Just sharpening a machete. It's Tuesday. I sharpened machete today.
It's Tuesdays. This is the day I sharpened my sling blade. Was this Kai's boyfriend?
No, my younger daughter.
Oh, okay. How did he react?
He reacted surprisingly well. It's the boyfriend that she still has. They've been together now like, I don't know, 5 years, something like that. And and he was totally cool with it. He was like, oh, that's cool. Can I see that? And, you know, we're looking at it and stuff. And it was pretty, it's a pretty neat machete. It's the one that's next to my bed right now.
Nice.
What makes a machete neat? Because when I think of machete, I think of the one you buy for $5 at Walmart when you have $5 to spend.
A machete should always be $5 or the equivalent. It's basically okay. You're just talking about
the right one.
Yeah, you're just talking about a comfortable handle and then a blade with a heavier tip, heavier out on the tip of the end than it is down toward the handle, so that it magnifies the impact of the swing. Right. And you can spend, you know, $50, $100 on those real fancy ones and everything. But if you spend that kind of money on a machete, you kind of don't want to take it out into the woods and bash things with it. And that's the whole purpose of the machete. Yeah. It's an extremely cheap, giant knife that you can use. You know, you can use it. You can pound on it with a hammer. You can do anything with it because you don't care. Because when you get done and it's worthless, you throw it away and spend $5 for another one.
Right.
Also,
kind of like they say, the fastest cars in the world are rental cars.
Yeah,
you don't care about them, so you'll gut them.
The other nice thing about a cheap machete is because it is cheap, the metal in it is really soft. And now that sounds like a bad thing, but it's actually a good thing because you can, if you bend it, you can straighten it. A good blade doesn't bend. A good blade will snap. Or there's a variation where if you do bend a good blade and it doesn't snap, you'll never get it straight again without snapping it. So a machete is good in that sense if it's cheap and you can re-straighten it with just pounding on it with a hammer. The other thing is, a blade that's really soft, you can literally get it razor sharp. Now, it won't keep that edge for very long, but it's real easy to get it razor sharp, and you can then use it and then immediately resharpen it again. So that's the nice thing, again, about a cheap machete is that you can keep it really amazingly sharp. And a sharp blade.
Which is why
blade.
Tuesdays are machete sharpening day.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
You got to do it once a week.
And a sharp blade is a safe blade. A dull blade is a dangerous blade.
That's very true. Yeah, I learned that when I was young. I was lucky enough to learn that.
Yeah,
I use the same philosophy with my broadsword.
I can't tell if he's joking or not.
I know it's hard to tell with Jim.
I think that's a good thing, though.
You'll just have to wonder if I actually have a broadsword or not.
Okay. Well, could you send me pictures of your broadsword? No homo. Okay, which one is a broadsword? Is that like the medieval English sword that's wide? That's why it's called a broadsword? Is that what I'm thinking of?
Yeah, it's just like a big, clumsy sword that's, you know, just really good at hacking at things.
Often a two-handed sword, usually something like a big claymore or one of the large Viking two-handed swords, that kind of thing.
Okay. I'm envisioning Ben at like a Home Shopping Network stage with a bunch of swords telling me about all the different kinds. You probably have a sword with a dragon as the hilt, don't you, Ben?
No, I have a cane with that, though.
Okay. I can totally see that.
Yeah, a cane's actually pretty amazing. I used to carry a cane a lot, not only because I had problems walking for a while after a concussion, but also because a cane is a wonderful self-defense weapon, and you can go anywhere. You can walk into a courtroom with it. You can go on an airplane with it.
That's what I was just going to say.
Yeah.
Yeah. Genius. Well, we'll have plenty more genius things like that after this quick trip to the market. Or is this the long one? Are we about to go on a long trip?
No, this is a quick one.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends.
Quick one? Okay.
An invigorating
alternative. Yeah, let's talk about sneaking weapons into court. I think that's a great topic.
Yeah.
My fellow sheep, election season is upon us. Are you one of the 12% of Americans who still approves of our government? Then we need your help to force the other 88% into compliance. Our democracy depends on it. We're an organization called Citizens Against Too Much Unfettered Freedom, or CATMUF. CATMUF is a bipartisan flock of sheep whose goal is expanding government until nothing else remains. Because the government is here to help you. How can you help CATMUF help you? By only voting for candidates dedicated to expanding government. It's easy. You don't need to study the issues. No matter what a politician says when running for office, they're all dedicated to expanding government. And make sure you tell all your friends and family to vote for more government. Here at CatMuff, we don't care if you vote Democrat or Republican, as long as you vote for candidates committed to growing our federal family. CatMuff, because folks just aren't smart enough to handle real freedom.
And we're back on the Freedom Fiends, talking about how to smuggle weapons into places where they're not allowed.
Now it's getting good. Now it's this is what you've waited for, the right, useful right. tips from the Freedom Fiends. News course, you can not, use.
Not, it's not how you smuggle weapons. It's how one could theoretically one could, yeah. smuggle weapons.
Or better yet, whatever you do, do not do these things, because we don't want you smuggling weapons into courtrooms and airplanes and things like that. That would be that'd be bad. That'd be really bad. Don't do that.
But bad for somebody. Bad for somebody, yeah.
If you're carrying a cane, and especially if you have a slight limp or if you're older like me so that you actually look like you might need a cane, you can literally walk through airport security and they're not even allowed to ask you about it because that would be discriminating against you for your disability.
Really? So yeah. How do they know you don't have one of those canes where you like pull a sword out of it?
They can and probably will examine it because they'll look for that specific thing. There are canes with knives in them and canes with weapons built in, and even there are canes with guns built in. So they will look at it according to the level of competence that of the goon you're dealing with. But as long as it's just a standard cane, and there's some on YouTube, if you search around a little bit, there's some fighting techniques with canes that are amazing. If a person is within, 6 or 8 feet of you and you know how to use a cane properly, it's like what was the Robert Downey Jr. movie where he was Sherlock Holmes? And he was like Kung Fu Cane Man in that.
Sherlock?
Was that the name of it?
I don't know. It's James?
Yeah, it was a Sherlock adaptation, but where it turned it into an action movie instead of like an intellectual drama.
Yeah. And of course, that was just a fantasy nonsense. But there are masters of cane fu or whatever you want to call it that are really good with canes.
Yeah, it's kind of like a baton. Yeah, it's like a bow or something.
Yeah,
like not the bow and arrow, but like a long stick that you swing around. What about belts? Because I watch the Boondocks, and Granddad is like Kung Fu Master with his belt. Is there? You have any tips on what kind of belts could best be weaponized if you were so inclined?
I used to carry an interesting thing under my belt. I don't know if I've ever talked about that on the Fiends before or not, but back in the olden days when such things were required of my profession, I had a motorcycle clutch cable, if you can imagine. Now, this is not the outer part that's usually dark black plastic coated. This is the inner core of a motorcycle cable, and it's just a stainless steel twisted cable. And I had on one end, I had soldered on just a lead tip just so that it wouldn't fray out. It wasn't very large or it wasn't for the, for weight or anything. It was just so it wouldn't fray the cable. And on the other end, I had soldered onto it a key ring. So it was just a round key ring. And I fed that underneath my belt around my waist, and I kept that there all the time. And then I would practice with it. I never actually had to use it, but I practiced with it as a whip it out, and basically you've got like a 30-inch steel whip, that's quite effective. Yeah. I also
you have a 30-inch waist, man?
Well, back then.
Well, it could also be a garrote, right? I mean, that sounds like they would have a variety of uses.
Yeah. Actually, when I was 19, I had a 29-inch waist and I had a 52-inch chest. So that'll kind of give you an idea of the level of physical fitness that I had back then. Yeah. I looked like Pierre.
Well, now, do you think, could we sneak that into a courtroom, do you think?
I went all the way to jail with it once when an accounting lockup.
Oh,
you know, and they took my
the
belt.
Other end of the courtroom in the jail cell.
They took my
belt.
They
took the belt, but left your garrote.
Yeah,
nice.
Yeah, it was. And they took my shoelaces.
I'm not familiar with that. You'd have to Google garrote.
Oh, it's just a wire for strangling people.
Gotcha.
Well,
you
know, I
would to be kind of thinner than that, though.
Yeah,
would that
maybe
be too thick for a garrote?
I don't know. Piano wire would be typical, I guess.
Right.
I went into this courthouse one time, and I went through the security checkpoint thing, and it's like this line, and like I had something. I went through a metal detector. I had a bag with me. And I went through the metal detector, and it, you know, didn't go off or anything. And I got all the way through, and they're like, "Oh, you have to take your belt off." I was like, "Oh, because they're looking for that." So I take my belt off right there, and I hand it to them. And they're like, "No, you have to go back and walk through and do the whole thing again with your belt off." But why? Because some we don't know what you could be bringing in your belt. Well, here's my belt.
Yeah.
No,
nope,
did
put,
not
if they
compute.
Could put two and two together, they wouldn't be government employees, right? they'd have found better jobs by then.
Are you sick of government lackeys who say you didn't build that? Are you tired of elitists like Barack Obama and Al Gore taking credit for the web while trying to take over the web? Are you disgusted by experts whose concept of the internet is that it's a series of tubes? Take back the free market of computing by encouraging software developers to adopt the BIPCOT NoGov license. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows any use or modification except by governments. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org. Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com.
This is the Freedom Fiends, Hour 2, broadcasting through the Libertarian Re-Education Center's low-orbit ion cannon high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. And Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT NoGov license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. You can learn more about that at BIPCOT.org. That's BIPCOT.org. And my name is Ben Stone on the Freedom Fiends. With me is Nima Vedotti and James Babb. Yeah. Hey, guys. How's it going?
So, Ben, when me and Mike, before we were on any radio stations and we were calling radio stations, it was mostly Michael, but we both called a few and did some pitches. One of our words in our copy was youth skewing. That's how we described the show. And we've gone from that till now. I'm going to ask you, what kind of cane do you have, Ben Stone?
On old folks radio.
Tell me about your cane.
So I have a couple different kinds of canes. I have a decorative one, and I have a lightweight one, and I have several. And the one I have that is specifically, it is considered a tactical cane, and it is made out of high.
This is no joke, absolutely.
It is high impact, unbreakable rubber. And it is extremely hard, and it's heavier than it looks like it should be. And on the grip part, it has the head of a dragon. And the purpose of that is not some, it's, you know, oh, it's cool, it's got a dragon. Yeah, but the purpose of it.
But it's got pointy edges on it.
It has teeth, pointy edges, and weight. And it's very heavy on the end. So you would very quickly switch it around and use
that. It's like a mace.
Literally, it's like a hammer. It's like, and this goes back to having a shillelagh goes back in Irish culture. You know, the British, when they invaded Ireland and took over, they outlawed the individual Irish of carrying any kind of weapon. So you couldn't carry a sword. You couldn't carry any kind of a, you know, of a proper weapon to defend yourself with. That was one of the things that the English made sure to do when they invaded Ireland, was to disarm the public. And so the way fixed that was, you have a cane, you have a shillelagh. It's just, they would take a limb of a tree, and where the limb connects with the tree, they would cut the tree. So the branch of the tree is like, you know, as big around as your fist with, or the tree itself, the bulk of the tree is like as big around as your fist. And then the branch coming out is much smaller. So you have essentially this hammer that's about, you know, 3 to 5 feet long. And if the government, you know, the British police that were in Ireland at the time, the troops, they come up and they want to hassle you about it. Hey, I'm an old man with a cane. What do you want from me?
That's so gangsta. That's like a shank on like a national level.
Yeah.
It's like we all carry this Irish shank, but bigger and more dangerous.
And like, well, Ben, I mentioned,
Have you ever heard of Bartitsu? It's a martial arts that uses the cane, and it actually was immortalized by Arthur Conan Doyle and Sherlock Holmes, where they called it Baritsu.
Yeah,
but it's a real like martial art fighting style that uses the cane.
In the 1800s, it was very, almost every proper gentleman carried some kind of a walking stick or cane or something. And it was just a typical thing, you know, in English society that kind of translated into the umbrella, and then it just got completely neutered, if we can refer to the English that way, you know, and not offend our delicate audience. But
well, you're referring to that particular style of attire and accessories neutered, right? Not the British themselves.
Evidently not. They're still around, so.
right. There's still plenty of them.
I just Googled umbrella fighting style to see what would come up.
Did anything yes, come
there's
up?
An umbrella. Yeah.
Is
yeah.
it a Monty Python it's, skit?
It's. I'm seeing more posts to Bartitsu, the cane fighting style. So evidently, maybe you could adapt this to. You remember that ancient, there was a real old show, I think it was black and white, called The Avengers. Do you remember that show?
Yeah.
Did there was that the dapper hero, I can't remember the character's name, a classic actor. Did he fight with his umbrella? Like it was like it was part of his weaponry, wasn't it?
It seems to me like he did.
All I can think of is Mary Poppins. That's the only thing I can think of, somebody using an umbrella for something other than the rain or the sunshine.
Yeah.
Oh, the Penguin in the second Batman.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
He have like a fully automatic umbrella.
Yeah.
And it was also a shield. Like he opened it up and it was bulletproof. And then out of the tip of it came, I guess, 223 or whatever caliber he was using.
Ballistic umbrella.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
There's a lot of things, though. There's
what...
Go ahead, Nima.
Well, I was just going to ask. I mean, you sound like you were about to answer. What other things can you use? Because if you are in a situation, like, for instance, I had to go on a cruise once. It was like family obligation. Like, a cruise wouldn't be my ideal vacation. And, you know, you're not allowed to bring your gun on a cruise ship. I found something that I used. But what would you advise somebody to do if it's
in a court.
Place for a, not necessarily court, because that's more of a short-term thing, right? But like on a cruise, you're there for like 4 or 5 days, you know, that's some time, and you're there at night. What would you advise, Ben? Do you have any ideas?
There's a couple of things that you can use that look fairly common. Combs and you know, something you might carry in your pocket, ink pens that are... There's a company, the name doesn't come to mind immediately, but there's a company that makes an ink pen that the case, it's actually an ink pen, you can write with it, but the casing is strong enough that you can pretty much, you know, puncture bone with it without damaging the ink pen body itself. But even something as simple as like what are those felt pens called? Sharpies. Like a Sharpie in your pocket. You essentially have as good a weapon as many prisoners have in jail that kill each other with things like that. You know, a Sharpie is a heavy enough and solid enough body that, you know, a good grip in it with the Sharpie extending out towards your from your fist in the little finger side of your fist coming down on somebody's neck is going to immediately incapacitate them. Even if it doesn't actually penetrate, it's going to bring a level of pain to them that's going to make them really consider leaving you alone.
That does sound painful.
Right on.
How do you come up with this stuff, Ben?
You know, certain
lifetime of experience.
Yeah. The last time I flew on an airplane, I had been in an auto accident in Reno, Nevada, right on the border between Reno and Sparks, Nevada, in the 90s, and it was a really nasty accident. And then we moved to Ohio not long after that, before the legal end of the accident was all settled, and I had to fly back to Reno, and this was about 1998 or 1999, somewhere in there. And I didn't think about it, and this was, you know, pre-9/11. So I didn't think anything about it. I go walking through the airport. I've got, you know, a knife hanging on my belt. I've got another knife in my pocket. That's how I walk around. And they stopped me and wouldn't let me take any knives on the plane. Again, this is pre-9/11. And I got so upset with them.
Right.
When I got to Reno, we had lived in Reno for several years before we moved away. And so when we got to Reno, I knew this place to go to that sells private investigator equipment. So they have all kinds of different gadgets and doodads for private investigators, which is a big business in Reno, Nevada. And so I went in there. I knew the guy. I went in there, said hi to him, and said, you know, what can you hook me up with? And I have... at that time, I purchased several plastic or, you know, hardened rubber type items that that look fairly normal, that you can carry, you know, walk right through a metal detector. Same thing with handcuff keys. There are little plastic one-time use handcuff keys that are like the size of a quarter, and you just pop them right out of their little case, use them, and throw them away. There's only three or four common handcuff keys that are used in law enforcement, and so it's not hard to have the one or two major ones that are used.
That's stashed on you just in case.
Yeah, in a pocket, gotcha. Or you know, taped onto the back of your belt behind your back where your hands would be if you were handcuffed. Again, it's an item that looks like an ink pen, but is in fact a tactical pointed, you know, object that looks in every way like an ink pen. Combs that you would carry in your pocket that actually have, you know, teeth like a comb, but one end of it is not really all that sharp, but it's sharpened enough to where you get a good grip on that dude, and it's going to do a lot of damage. Think of the scene in Breaking Bad where Walt has, like, I think it was 10 or 11 guys. Like,
killed all at the same time within, like, 30 seconds or something. They're just all shanked, and the blood splatters all over the window, and it's really horrific.
Yeah.
But, yeah, those are all weapons that guys just call them everyday items in the prison, right?
Yeah, literally a toothbrush in the right hands is... I'll quote a person who you're almost never going to hear me quote, G. Gordon Liddy. After he became a felon, he was not allowed to carry a gun. And so he made the statement that it's perfectly okay that he didn't have a gun because, first off, a knife never misfires, a knife never jams. He went through this whole list of positive things about a knife, and then he said, and when all else fails, you can kill with a straw. And if you think about it, there are actually straws that are like hard plastic straws that would be perfect for a weapon.
And so I guess the big takeaway, not only that you should learn how to utilize all these, at least know that they exist, both for your own defense to know what you should be cautious of, but also for your own defense in the sense that you might need to cobble a weapon together if you're in a certain situation. But it seems like the main thing is you have the right to defend yourself no matter what you use, so make sure you know how to.
Yeah. You know, and the greatest self-defense weapon is between your ears. It's having the right attitude, having awareness, knowing your situation, knowing your surroundings, and making direct eye contact. That's, you know, I've been in some really nasty neighborhoods under questionable circumstances, and I keep my head up, I look around, I make eye contact, and I let everybody know that I'm paying attention. And that alone is a major aspect of self-defense.
Well, let's get into some nonviolent methods of self-defense when we come back from this trip to the market.
Yeah.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty Talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Wake up and smell the freedom. One of the easiest things you can do to help Liberty is to torrent Freedom Fiends episodes to help keep them drone-proof. You can set up your home computer to download and share Freedom Fiends archives over BitTorrent. You can even set up scheduling so it only shares while you're asleep or at work. Put your unused computing power to work and help keep the Freedom Fiends around well into the future. Simply go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Torrent Club link and learn how to torrent and share Freedom Fiends archives.
Freedom Fiends Talk Radio Show. This is Nima Vadati. I'm here with the Bad Quaker Ben Stone and James Babb. And we were talking about self-defense. I guess we were talking about weapons you can utilize that you wouldn't think are weapons. Canes, straws, and the like. And Ben mentioned, you know, the best tool, in fact, the main tool, the first line of defense and the last line of defense is your own brain, you know, what's between your two ears. And really important point, because I know I feel safe, at least in the sense that I'm really good at talking to people and getting on their level. And, you know, I go through bad neighborhoods in my day job and I'll talk to everybody. I'll knock on doors, I'll smile. The most gangsta person or redneck person, I just make eye contact with them, smile, and crack a joke.
Yeah.
And I've never, ever felt threatened. And it's one of the reasons, and same with dogs too. Dogs pick up on your demeanor. I'll go, you know, 150-pound Great Danes, giant dogs, muscular pit bulls, and I'll just say hi, and I'll bend down a little bit and give him my hand and say, hey, you want me to pet you, etc. And you know, I never feel threatened about a dog, and it's one of the reasons I get so angry about all these cop stories, is because I feel like they, with both people and dogs, their first line of interaction is violence, where all you need to do is build rapport first.
In the most, you know, the vast majority of situations that turn violent, I believe this, it'd be very difficult to prove it, but I believe that the vast majority of situations that turn violent are strictly misunderstandings, as far as reading each other's body language, the reactions that take place. Because I think the vast majority of people, when a violent situation happens, most people are not looking for it to happen. They just don't think there's any other way out of the situation, and therefore violence happens. Mm. I think in most cases, if you can offer an exit strategy to the person in the bad situation that does not involve shaming them, making them feel bad about themselves, you know, putting them down. If you can provide an honorable escape in a situation, very many of the most violent encounters can be de-escalated just by offering them a noble escape, rather than the typical authoritarian police method is to always be the top dog in the situation. And
you now, know, keep in mind, this advice is coming from the guy that's had like 25 concussions and has been shot multiple times. So just let's take this advice with a grain of salt, okay?
That's very true. I cannot deny that.
Well, did you have an epiphany? I mean, when was your last concussion? I mean, at least 5 years ago, right?
Yeah, probably. It's been probably 5 years or so.
Okay, okay. So you must have learned how to avoid concussions, or you just right, love the sport of fighting.
And nobody's needed to shoot you for years now, right?
That's right. Nobody's tried to kill
needed
me for
to.
A long time.
I love
time.
That. No one has needed yeah. to shoot Ben. Just one. Yeah.
I did. To answer that question, Nima, I actually did enjoy fighting when I was 17, 18 years old, 19. I it was, you know, very sportful in my – I kind of liked it. I was kind of a jerk. And, yeah. you know, I would allow myself to get in situations where that would take place. And I had to learn – go ahead.
Well, that kind of steps on what we were talking about, though, because when you were that age and you wanted to fight somebody just because you wanted to show what a badass you were, what could somebody have said or done or looked at you, a way they could have looked at you to de-escalate? Was there a way? Or when you made up your mind, was your mind made up?
You know, I had – I think this goes to a different philosophical point that I might be able to make. I think most people who are – you know, criminal types or bad people or however you want to look at it, they have a series of ways that they justify themselves. So for me, I always had this white knight type thing. So I would always sit back and be quiet until somebody was too loud and obnoxious, and then I would come in and save the day. And the way to de-escalate that for somebody would have been to immediately, because it was very much like a cop attitude that I had back then. And so if the way to de-escalate it with me would have been for them to take a subservient role in the confrontation.
To submit.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. And that would have been, all right, fine, I won, you know. But I'm saying that, you know, I was pretty messed up back then. I was not that good of a person.
You could have become a policeman with that kind of attitude.
Yeah.
Well, it was probably because I was around them all the time.
We'll be back in just a bit, folks.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
The Michigan Peace and Liberty Coalition is proud to present the 3rd Annual Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest. It will be held at the Circle Pine Center in Delton, Michigan from August 7th through the 10th. There will be vending, discussions, presentations, all sorts of activities for children and adults, and bacon, lots of bacon. Round up your friends and family and get them registered today at miplc.org. That's miplc.org. Dogs welcome. Longer leashes recommended.
Are you sick of peaceful people being locked away for victimless crimes? Instead of trying to get out of jury duty, consider taking it so you can do the right thing. A single juror with a conscience can send someone home to their family instead of to a jail cell. If there's no victim, how can there be a crime? And if the judge or prosecutor are keeping you in the dark, what are they trying to hide? You can vote your conscience instead of being a pawn of the state. For more information, Google jury nullification or check out the Fully Informed Jury Association at fija.org.
Fiendependence Day.
The Freedom Fiends celebrating our fiend dependence, and we'll get into what exactly that means in a little bit. For right now, though, so speaking of self-defense and self-defense from the state, if they've unjustly kidnapped you, James brought up a really good point, something that was a hot topic at last week's Pork Fest. James, go ahead and enlighten us.
Well, you know, Ross Ulbricht, his life sentence for running a website was a key topic. And Lynn Ulbricht was one of the featured speakers, and she is just loved and adored by everyone that meets her, and the Porkfest crowd is, you know, basically in the palm of her hand, and we're all just so distraught with this vicious life without parole sentence that he received, that, you know, couldn't help but discuss the possibility of jailbreaks, right? Like, it seems like it's his only hope. I mean, there's a legal appeal, but it's like, oh, lawyers, you know, play their game again. You know, it's hard to get excited about that.
Well, plus, it could take decades at best, right? I mean,
yeah.
Plus, the very week that Porkfest took place, there was a giant manhunt in that part of the country up in upper state New York for two guys that had broken out of jail in New York or Connecticut or somewhere. You know, all those places are the same to me. I'm in Alabama. All those Yankee places are the same. But
yeah.
So that was
we shouldn't even be talking about this in terms of Ross Ulbricht because it'll get back to the judge, and he'll be on 24-hour lockdown for the rest of his life.
Yeah, especially considering what they did with Reason over a couple of clowns making a comment about a wood chipper at Reason magazine website, and all of a sudden they've got legal action against Reason because a couple of clowns make a joke about a movie. You know, come on. The government has no sense.
That judge really gets her feelings hurt.
Yeah.
See, on the outrage, when I read what happened in that case with that not the verdict necessarily, but the sentencing, just how awful it was and the reasoning behind why she said it. It was basically, you're trying to change the world for the better. I have to defend the status quo with all I've got, so you're locked up for the rest of your life.
And we should mention, too,
of her statements.
There was a lot of stuff in the media about, you know, accusations of murder plots and all that. None of that had anything to do with why Ross got a life sentence. That was not brought up in
the
court.
The case wasn't even strong enough for it to be on the prosecution's case.
Exactly.
And this is America, where a prosecutor could prosecute a ham sandwich and get away with it.
Yeah, so that is not what he was tried for. That was not what he was convicted of.
Right.
But yeah, so vague.
So it made me feel like that can't stand. I mean, Ross has got to be free one day in my lifetime, at least, right?
He has to be, right? But what are you going to do? I mean, play the legal game? It just seems it seems like such a dead end. I think there's just this feeling of desperation. And it's not like anybody is really going to come up with a jailbreak strategy that's viable. I mean, this is what happens on TV. But, you know, you start to think about these things. Do you guys remember that jailbreak in maybe earlier this year? Which was, to me, this is the ultimate style of jailbreak. 28 prisoners broke out of a prison after three women dressed up in lingerie and staged a fake orgy for the wardens. Okay.
Oh, that's so Brazil.
And anyway, I guess... somehow they use their womanly charms to, you know, to chat up and get these guys drinking booze that maybe was laced with something, but they all woke up and everybody was gone. Like, oops.
That's great.
Oh, wow.
But this is brilliant.
There's an episode of Boondocks where they have a prison riot, and Boondocks, the guy who creates it, Aaron Magruder, he's a little bit like lefty revolutionary, like so much so that he hates Barack Obama, but he's not really an anarchist in the kind of our anarchist sense. But there's an episode where the prisoners take over the prison and they start this like democratic council, and they're like following Robert's rules of order, and they're like doing all this stuff and saying, I move that we have white girls come here, and they're like, no, I want Chinese girls. And that's all they're arguing over is what kind of girls they're going to have sent to the prison. Those are their demands. And in the end, they get into this democratic gridlock so much that the guards are able to like overtake them again and end the riot. It. Democracy fails even in the prison like that. So I think anarchist jailbreak would be everybody gets bitcoins together and pays the guards in bitcoin to just walk away for a little bit.
Well, yeah. I guess
why not?
Some of the details are coming out from that prison break up in wherever it was, New York or Connecticut or someplace up there. That the guards were in on that. The one of them.
Of course they were.
Yeah. Well, you know, these people, you think about, I'll go back to quoting G. Gordon Liddy again. You think about the life of a guard. Okay, so, you know, they're not smart enough to be a cop. Now, let's just ponder that for a moment. They're not smart enough to be a cop. And they voluntarily put themselves in prison for their entire career. That's who we're talking about.
That's depressing. Yeah, yeah. Or they become famous rappers like Rick Ross.
to quote Michael, I don't know what that means.
There's this famous rapper named Rick Ross, you know, after Freeway Ricky Ross. Big dude, like big chunky dude. And raps about dealing drugs in Miami all day long. And he used to be a corrections officer.
Well, wow. I'm glad to see he found honest work.
Yes,
exactly. He did. Yeah.
Now, when you say honest work, but,
imagine that guy that's like, imagine that guy. Yeah, imagine that guy that's like, gosh, my life is so miserable. I'm so depressed. What could I do to turn my life around? What's going to be my big break? That's it. I'm going to be in prison all day, every day.
And
that's
my
big.
Think of the abuse they suffer too. You know, every prisoner in there hates them. We'll spit on them if they were given the opportunity. We'll do, you know, talk down to them, anything that they can. That's what you're doing as a living. You know, anything would be better. That would, what a life.
If they stick around, don't they get, I mean, if they stick around for 20 years, they get the government retirement package, I'm assuming, right? And that's probably what they're all trying to do is, you know, they start it when they're 20 years old. By the time they're 40, they get 3/4 of their salary for the rest of their life. They can go double dip and get another job. Maybe after 20 years as a corrections officer, you can actually be a real cop. And, and you know, you're making pretty decent money at that point.
Wow.
Well, I guess they get to feel like the tough guy a lot, too. You know, they get to be the bully that they couldn't be in high school.
Yeah.
You
know? Right. They get to be in charge. So maybe that's the weak link is psychology, right?
Aha.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's sort of social hacking is like that. You think of I used to have a job. I used to do market research for a company out of Chicago. I didn't live in Chicago. I did it remotely. And it was my job to call hospitals and find out who was the decision-making person who bought new defibrillators. Now, that doesn't – you know, that it sounds like you know that shouldn't be too hard. You just call the hospital and say, hey, who buys your defibrillators? No, they don't want to tell you because they know that there are salespeople out there that will harass the hospital nonstop. So social hackers, right. You have to learn how to call and you find out who the nurse is on duty. And then you call back and ask for her knowing that she's either busy or not on duty. And you go through this process until you – and you're sitting there making notes the whole time until you have a series of notes that cover who works on this floor, who the different people are, who's in maintenance in that floor. And then you start calling people and you start saying – dropping names. You know, hey, I was just talking to Betty and she was telling me that Bill can't figure out how we're going to upgrade these new defibrillators. Do you know who is supposed to deal with that? Now, if you take that same type of process and you could get all kinds of information from these people because they think they don't know that you're calling from outside the hospital. They think it's an internal call.
Right.
So you can do
this. It's probably common they get internal calls asking, hey, who does this? Who does that? Who do I talk to?
Yeah. And if you can drop the right names, it sounds like you're part of the crew. And you could do the same thing with pretty much anything. We're talking about a court system. We're talking about a prison system. We're talking about IBM. We're talking about, you know, anything like that. This type of social hacking is a very effective way of gathering information and getting in and dropping information, leaving information behind that you want them to already be thinking.
Right.
And then the other thing that James mentioned when we were on break was the series that I did on Beyond Civil Disobedience. You know, if you have people who are good actors, good at playing a role, then you get a couple people that kind of have, you know, I'm thinking of a couple people that are that kind of have the look to begin with that would make a good
no neck.
Yeah. No good neck. Nice short hair, like
federal marshal like look, like possibly steroid ridden, you know, riddled,
or even better, like late 40s, very short hair, slightly overweight and aggravated. They don't want to be doing this, but they show up at the, you know, the county lockup to pick up this prisoner that they have to transport over, and they hate coming down here because every time the paper's not right. and they're aggravated, right. And you know, they just want to get through this, and you know, who's working today? Oh man. And then the next thing you know, they've got your key prisoner, and they're doing the transfer. And this has actually happened in Florida. I was looking at this a few weeks ago, and this has actually happened with quite amount of frequency in the Florida prison systems, that quite a few people have been taken out of the Florida prison systems using just that type of processes.
And I'm sure they aren't very quick to do a press release on this one when it happens.
No,
right?
No, you're only getting local news stories.
It may happen all the time for all we know.
Yeah, you're only getting local news stories.
You know what? I'll bet if you did it right, they wouldn't even know they lost a prisoner.
That would be the perfect
thing. The paperwork.
Yeah.
Right, because the paperwork at one prison would all match up, and the paperwork at the next prison would all match up, and they wouldn't even know that somebody's just not part of their system anymore.
It would be like taking the
meth. It
would
literally be like that scene in Idiocracy where he's like, no, I'm supposed to be in that line of the guys leaving. They're like, dumb, you're in the wrong line. Get over there.
Or I was thinking of the train heist in Breaking Bad, where they remove the exact amount of methylethylene or whatever, and they put water back in.
Oh, that's right. That's right, yeah.
They never know it happened.
But this wouldn't even be that hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Wow.
Would we have to give them an extra prisoner as in exchange? Like,
we'd have to make a human sacrifice.
Yeah, we'd have to pick somebody to take Ross Ulbricht's place in jail. I'm sorry, dude, but
well, then after 6 months in jail, they're like, "Hey, why am I here?" And they're like, "Who are you? What are you doing in there?"
It'll just be like a relay, libertarian relay.
Yeah.
Well, I'll each do 6 months.
Listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
For some reason in this country, and most of the Western world, it's okay to just dodge.
Hey, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. Computer programmer Derek Slopey and I have created Fiend Phone. I'm using Fiend Phone right now to talk with and record one of my co-hosts in real time. Take it, Davi.
Hey, this is Davi Barker, and I'm 1,000 miles away from Michael, but we sound like we're in the same room.
We sure do, Davi. So, Davi, please tell the nice people more about FiendPhone.
FiendPhone is free, no-gov software that opens up a global world of possibilities for collaborative, high-quality, remote voice media production, and I'm digging it.
People can try FiendPhone right now at FiendPhone.com, but we're also raising money to vastly improve FiendPhone and vastly improve independent talk media worldwide.
So go to FiendPhone.com to help out. Who will build the audio roads? We will, with your help.
That's fiendphone.com, FEENPHONE.com. Foxtrot, Echo, November, phone.com.
Fiendphone, I never knew remote audio could be this good.
Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz.
First rule of being alive is you own yourself.
A groundbreaking approach to firearms and self-defense training. Beautifully filmed and easy to understand instructions make this one a must-have. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. New DVD from Michael W. Dean. Available on Amazon.
Your house is your property.
What is that Davi says? He says something along the lines of everything I say should be taken. How does he say that? The opposite of if I say anything that's right. Fattening, illegal, or immoral, you should take it as the exact opposite. He says something
it's
like
satire
that.
Satire meaning the opposite.
Yeah. So everything we say about Ross or about breaking anybody out of jail or about anything else that might be illegal, fattening, or immoral. It's all parody. We're all covered.
Parody. Maybe.
Yeah.
Right.
That was the word.
Political parody.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Fair enough. So it is Fiend Dependence Day. That sounds a little redundant to me, though, right? Because a fiend comes from fiend, like crack fiend, which means you're dependent on the crack.
Dependent,
so.
Right. So
we're dependent on freedom.
Fiend Fiend Day. Take your Fiend Fiend. The FDA approved it.
Now, are you guys going to any special celebrations today or fireworks or...
I'm driving. We're going to try to drive to Alabama.
All right.
See how long it takes me.
All right.
Drive to Alabama.
What about you, Ben?
I don't know. Should be. If it is.
Will you be waving flags of any kind?
Not very likely. The flag that I have with me, if I start waving that at a campground, I might get shot. I might have to go into what we talked about earlier with self-defense mode.
Yeah.
Is it the rainbow slash Confederate flag that people on Facebook have been passing around?
No, I have an ANCAP flag. That probably would, first it would bring curiosity. Well, what's that for? What does that mean? And then down would come the reins of, oh my. But you know, hey, on a similar note though, there's this one road that goes along Mobile Bay, and there's a lot of like multi-million dollar homes that are up on stilts sticking out over Mobile Bay, and it's a beautiful area. And you see, as you go down through, you know, a lot of people with boats like to have flags. Boats and flags kind of go hand in hand. So a lot of these people actually have a little boat dock in front of their house, and it's really cool. And so you see a lot of flags going down through there. And then occasionally, you will see a sign that says "Pirates Only," and they'll have either a black flag or a pirate flag, and it kind of stands out. It's almost like they're making a statement. You know, this is not, we're not flying the American flag at this particular place, and they'll have black flags, or they'll have not Confederate flags, but
ISIS flags.
Yeah, almost at that. But I have to wonder. The Jolly Roger. But I have to wonder how many of those people, especially the ones that are just flying a plain black flag, I wonder how many of those actually know what they're, you know, what they're signifying when they do that.
I think they do. I think that it, even if it's just sort of intuitively, they've made a mental jump, right? They want to contrast themselves to those people that are flying those other colors.
Yeah.
So whether the extent of they know the history behind that, the symbolism, maybe not, but I think they're on to something nonetheless.
I kind of intended to read part of the Declaration of Independence today, and we've kind of went off the rails from the first minute of the show. But I wanted to point out a lot of libertarian-leaning and freedom-loving type people, and especially, you know, even some ANCAPs and some anarchists are real comfortable with the Declaration of Independence. But if you read through that thing, it's kind of assumed in it that, you know, it says something to the effect of, yeah, okay, so we're breaking off, but it's our God-given right to have a government of our own. And that's kind of the theme of it, is it's almost a religious proclamation that is their duty to form another government. And as I read through it today, I thought, this is not an anarchist document. This is not real independence. This is one group of elites breaking off, wanting to be the boss of, you know, they're tired of being pushed around and they want to be the boss. But that's really all it was.
It's true. Yeah. But, you know, I think everybody loves the sort of the list of grievances, because we could kind of all relate to their complaints. You know, and we all sort of feel that pain. So I think maybe that's where that comes from.
Yeah.
But the solution, their solution wasn't to say, look, we're all going to be individuals now. It was just to get a new king.
Yeah.
But now we can do better than that.
Yeah. Well, you know, we've thought through this stuff a lot better. We've laid precept upon precept and concept upon concept, and we have the luxury of, you know, having writings from really smart people like Lysander Spooner and Thoreau and, you know, Goldberg. Anyway, Murray Rothbard.
And having them all in our pockets.
Yeah.
All in our pockets at any given time. You can read them and talk to your friend across the world about them. And that's Fiend Dependence, baby.
Yeah, right, it's on. A game changer.
I want some illegal fireworks now.
Hey, thanks, guys. Good show. Thanks a lot.
Worms.
Thank you, guys.
Peace.